Welcome to episode 59 of the 3M Fear podcast. In 1948, a woman contacted the Greek police, reporting that her mother had signed over all her money to Mariam's monastery. Now this raised a concern. Why would she do that? Additionally, another woman named Eugene Marietta came forward alleging that she had been held captive, beaten and forced to give a large sum of money to Mariam before being released. The situation gained international attention when a Greek man living in America reported that his 18-year-old daughter was missing. He traced her movements to Greece. This prompted the FBI to intervene, leading to action against Mariam by the Greek authorities. When the police went there, they discovered a disturbing scene. They had no idea about the horrors that were taking place behind the monastery's closed doors. Hello and welcome to the 3AM Fear podcast. I'm Nikita Ferrao, mystery and thriller author. On this podcast, I talk about real crimes and real people. Due to the graphic nature of some of this content, listener discretion is advised. You can find the episode show notes on my website 3amfear.com. Let's get started. The story takes place in Greece. There lived a woman named Mariam Solakiotis. She was born around the year 1883, but no one knows the exact date because there is no official record. Now I'm sure that this name may not ring a bell to many, but she is still known to be one of Greece's biggest serial killers. But before we jump into that, let's get to know Mother Mariam a little more. Mariam's childhood was a mystery, and we don't know much about it. It is said that she spent most of her life working on farms and in factories. Her family was said to be poor, and not much is known about her. One day, Mariam would end up meeting a man who called himself Father Matthew. He was known to be a monk. Little did Mariam know that hers and many others' life would be changed after that. Now skipping ahead to when Mariam was 23 years old, she was working in a factory and was helping out on a farm. It was during this time that she met this man, Matthew Karpis. Matthew used to be a priest monk in the Greek Orthodox Church. But he left because he disagreed with a big change that happened in Greece. Now you see, for a long time, most of the world followed the Julian calendar, which was created by Julius Caesar in 46 BC. But over time, this calendar started causing problems. The seasons didn't match up correctly, and holidays like Easter were happening at the wrong time. This was because the Julian calendar was a bit off in its calculations. It thought that there were 365.25 days in a year, but it's actually a little less. And this small difference, added up over the years, caused a lot of problems. Now you must be thinking, what does a nun, a priest, and a change in calendar have anything to do with murder? It all does, and there's going to be a huge havoc ahead. Now because of this difference, many countries were trying to change their calendars, and Matthew was not happy. When Mariam met Matthew, he had recently left the church because he refused to accept this calendar change. And that's where our story starts. I'm not going to go too deep into this, but just know that in 1582, Pope Gregory XIII introduced a new calendar named after him, and that was known as the Gregorian calendar. As you know, Maryam met Matthew, who used to be a priest monk, but after he left the church because he was not happy with this calendar change. Maryam shared his same feelings. She wanted to stick to the old calendar. There is not much known about her. Some say that she was a nun, but there is no proof to that. Maryam saw this as an opportunity. Some people even thought that she may have had a crush on him, but whatever the case, they bonded over their shared dislike for this calendar change. Matthew wanted to start his own monastery, and Maryam wanted to be a part of it. She did everything he asked, eager to show her devotion. By 1927, Matthew's dream came true. They set up their monastery in a village called Karatia near Athens. Maryam became the head nun, which meant that she had a lot of power. But they weren't the only ones upset about the calendar change. Thousands of people, including Orthodox Church leaders, rejected it. And Matthew and Maryam saw this as their opening. Matthew's followers became known as Matthewites, while others who refused the new calendar were called the old calendarist. They set up over 800 parishes across Greece. Some bishops who agreed with the Orthodox Church also joined them, including Matthew. Now, Maryam was also known as Mother Maryam and Mother Rasputin. Their monastery was a white church on a hill surrounded by forest. Maryam was like a mother to the nuns there. But by this time, Matthew was old and sick, and he was spending most of his days in prayer. Little did they know, their monastery would soon be the center of a terrible tragedy. Now, according to the reports, Father Matthew had built this convent for two purposes. The first one was to praise the Virgin Mary. The second one was to secure financial aid for his movement. Now, under the charge of Mother Superior, the convent's mission changed. It was more about getting money. She wanted to get more and more members. The more members that came in, the more money that would come in. Now, at that time, in the 1800s, tuberculosis was the leading cause of death. It was also called as the White Death, and it was feared by many. And since at that time there was no vaccine, no antibiotic, no way to escape this White Death, people had nothing to fight against this disease. And so the only hope of many tuberculosis patients was to move away from this hot and humid weather and stay somewhere which was slightly higher. Mother Superior's convent was the perfect place for this. As you know, when someone is suffering from tuberculosis, they can have weakness, chest pain, coughing, shortness of breath, so many other symptoms. And at that time, it could have even led to death. Matthew was spending most of his time in isolation. He would wear chains and fast for days. With him mostly all alone in prayer, Maryam ended up running the monastery. Trouble began when she took charge. It's unclear if Matthew knows exactly what was happening behind his back, but Maryam had turned this place into a nightmare. Survivors came forward with stories of beatings, starvation, torture, and even murder inside the monastery. Maryam seemed to have wanted power and money more than anything else. She targeted these wealthy women. She would recruit them and then she would take advantage of them. These wealthy women had the same belief. They didn't like the change in calendar and they were fighting for the same cause. But the only difference was that Maryam wanted their money and they thought that Maryam was trying to help them, trying to stop this calendar from changing. When these new recruits arrived, the first thing that Mother Maryam did was to force them to give up all their money and gold. They were forced to pray for hours, sometimes up to 15 hours straight. Then they were locked in the basement cell and made to fast for up to 40 days. They would also be forced to go through sleep deprivation. Now, in order to make sure that they did not fall asleep, guards were kept up. Maryam would use torture techniques to keep them alert, like forcing them into painful positions or making them walk continuously. Depriving them of sleep was torture in itself. Now, extreme sleep deprivation can mess with your head. Research says that it can even make you do false confessions in your sleep. So you can imagine to what extent Miriam was messing with their head. Your emotions go haywire, you can't think straight, your physical abilities suffer, you just don't know what's happening to you. Miriam loved doing this. Miriam would keep these new recruits awake for at least a week, breaking them down mentally and physically. Once they were at their weakest, she would convince them to join the monastery, promising salvation if they handed over all their money and possessions. There was also the strict vow of silence, but Miriam took it to a violent extreme. If anyone dared to speak, she would beat them with her shoe. Physical dominance was a big part of her rule. She'd tie people up, hang them from the ceiling, beat them for hours on end. She would even force them to confess their deepest, darkest secrets. And later on, she would use the same information to blackmail them. Now, in order for all of this to work, Mother Miriam always made sure that she targeted wealthy families. She wanted wealthy women to come in, so first thing, she would get all their money, she would get any gold or anything that they had, and then she would also get their deepest, darkest secrets so that they can never go and tell anyone anything. She made sure that they cut ties with their families and friends by telling them that everyone other than them was living a sinful life, and that the only way of salvation was to listen to Mother Miriam. Now, as I had said before, tuberculosis was on widespread at that time. People needed medical attention, and so not everyone who came to the monastery came there for prayer. Some of them, or rather a majority of them, were there for treatment. But unfortunately, they had no idea that there was no treatment awaiting them in that monastery. The poor patients who came there for treatment and help received beatings, torture, and brainwashing. One woman, also known as Miss Molo, had tuberculosis and had heard about the monastery. She thought that it was her chance to get better. But when she arrived, she was thrown into a cage and was hardly given any food or medical attention. Doctors weren't allowed to go in there unless it was to sign death certificates. Now, you would think that if it was a place for treatment, a doctor would be there. But unfortunately, this was not the case. She would quickly become weaker and sadly pass away. This was the same fate faced by many other women. Miriam preyed on their desperation, promising them treatment and spiritual healing. But instead, they only found suffering and death. Once inside the monastery, promises of care and salvation turned into nightmare for those like the Baca family. They were drawn in by shards of belief in the old Julian calendar. They were stripped of their belongings and dignity. They were subjected to unimaginable cruelty. Mrs. Baca endured weeks in a filthy cell. She was not given proper food. She was not allowed to sleep until her body couldn't take it anymore. Mr. Baca also suffered the same fate, both falling victim to beatings and torture. Others also faced similar horror. If there were any other nuns who were afraid or who wanted to take a stand, Miriam herself would beat those nuns. It was a nightmare. There was no chance for anyone to escape. Despite the cruelty inflicted by Miriam, some nuns, like Sister Theodore, dared to speak up. But as I said, Miriam was not having it. Another nun who spoke out suffered severe beatings, barely surviving. Strangely, no one reported these horrors to the authorities. Villagers nearby could hear screams and moans from the monastery. One even saw a frail elderly woman wearing chains. But they thought that this was maybe some sort of a prayer that they were doing, and these alarming signs went unreported. When the case finally came to light, witnesses began to step forward, revealing the years of abuse and torture that had occurred. Meanwhile, Matthew's health became worse after suffering a stroke. leaving him paralyzed on one side and unable to say anything to what Miriam was saying. If Miriam was not in complete control then, she definitely was now. In 1948, a woman contacted the Greek police, reporting that her mother had signed over all her money to Miriam's monastery. Now this raised a concern. Why would she do that? Additionally, another woman named Eugene Marietta came forward alleging that she had been held captive, beaten, and forced to give a large sum of money to Miriam before being released. The situation gained international attention when a Greek man living in America reported that his 18-year-old daughter was missing. He traced her movements to Greece. This prompted the FBI to intervene, leading to action against Miriam by the Greek authorities. Now, unfortunately, it's not known to what happened to the girl, but many believe that she is safe and she was returned back home. But there's no proper proof for this. When the police went there, they discovered a disturbing scene. They heard from the villagers about the screams and sightings of people wearing chains around the monastery. Now, digging deeper, that's when they found out that Mother Miriam was involved in illegal activities like smuggling olive oil and tires. With enough evidence, the police raided the monastery early one morning in December of 1950. They found elderly women tied up, children living in poor conditions, and a stash of money and land titles. Now on that day, despite their search, that girl was not found. 85 police officers had spent 2 days searching and rescuing 46 children along with a number of naked and malnourished elderly women. They had also found over 170 bodies. On September 4, 1951, Mother Miriam's trial began. But she didn't suffer much because it's not illegal to join a monastery, and what happens within this religious cults or religious followings is not something illegal. She was found to be in possession of $750,000 in cash, and she also had a lot of deed to a lot of land. She was convicted on 2 counts of illegal business activities, and she received 26 months in prison for illegally importing tires and exporting olive oil to Cyprus. But that's it, she was not punished much. The authorities rescued the abused individuals, including the children, and took them to hospital for treatment. The police investigation revealed the monastery's dark secrets, including allegations of abuse, torture, and even murder. Now, as I said, I'm not sure what happened to the girl, but it's said that she eventually reunited with her father. Now, despite the shocking discoveries made during the raid on the monastery, prosecutors were hesitant because, as I said, it was religious. Many of Miriam's actions, such as vow of silence, fasting, trying to stay awake against your will, these all are things that she said was because of religious purpose. People did it because of religious purpose. So police couldn't actually intervene in this. And many of the individuals who died, died because of tuberculosis. Many were old and they were weak. That also could not be traced back to Mother Miriam. The testimonies of the victims found tied up may not have been sufficient to pursue more serious charges. Perhaps because they were under Miriam's influence, and they believed that whatever she wanted them to do was justified. As a result, she was only given 26 months in prison. But let's say, lucky for everyone and not for her, the case gained significant media attention, leading to further scrutiny of Miriam's actions. After the shocking revelations about Miriam's monastery became public, more and more victims came forward with horrific stories. They told the police about being captive, constantly weakened, deprived of sleep and food, and subjected to beatings and torture. All of this against their will. They didn't do it because of religion. They had nothing to do with the sickness. It was all against their will. This sparked a whole new investigation, leading to Maryam's second trial in 1953. This time, she faced charges including negligent homicide, embezzlement, abuse, torture, forging wills, extortion, and the murder of three nuns and a monk. Police estimated that 177 people had lost their lives because of Maryam. This time, she was found guilty but only sentenced to 10 years in prison, even after doing all of this. But once again, this was not the end. Maryam faced a third trial for illegal detention and was found guilty yet again, adding another 4 years to a sentence. In total, she would receive only 16 years in prison. Despite being labeled as one of the most evil women in history, some believe that she was innocent, that she had nothing to do with this. At the age of 71, while in prison, even as she was on her deathbed, she kept telling that she was innocent and that all the accusations against her were satanic fictions. It is said that even after she died, the monastery didn't close. I mean, it's not officially open for anyone to walk in, but it is said that after she died, someone else took over. No one knows who that person is. Even as recently as 2019, it is said that there is someone else who is running this monastery. Now, it is unclear to why Maryam did this. Did she only want money? Or did she believe that what she was doing was right? Did the calendar have a key role to play in this? Or was she just someone who was looking for a shortcut to getting more money? As I said, even after Maryam died, reports of missing girls surfaced, suggesting that there is still something going on underground. Maryam died in prison in 1954, leaving behind a legacy of terror and infamy. A big thank you to all my fellow listeners who have been listening to all my episodes. Thank you so much. Your listens, your support means a lot. If you love my podcast, if you love the stories that I put out, then please do follow me on whichever podcasting platform you are listening from. And please do leave a rating. It will really help me a lot. You can listen to me on other platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcasting platform. If you are in India, you can always listen to my podcast on Gaana or JioSaavn. If you love to listen to strange and mysterious stories, then follow me on Instagram and YouTube, where I put out reels on such stories. These are completely different from the ones that I put out on my podcast, so do follow me on them. If you love travel, you can follow me on my travel channels. I'll link them also in the description. Until then, stay kind and stay safe out there.